Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show. Before we jump into today's show, please check out my kids' new podcast. I have 9-year-old twin boys. They like to eat food, just like their papa. And they have a brand new restaurant review and cooking tips and plant foraging and completely anything tasty or palate related podcast. And it rocks, if I don't say so myself. Those cute little adorable munchkins have done it again. Go to gogreenfields.com. That's gogreenfields.com to check out their show. In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show,
one of the lessons that, you know, we all know and we all learn, but we all try to forget, is that you can't really get good at more than one thing at once. You can't get significantly stronger and faster at the same time.
A couple of years ago, I tried to give up coffee. And after a couple of weeks, I noticed I had a really hard time focusing and everything else. And I did not think I was drinking tea or something lighter. And I totally did not even consider that it was the fact that I had given up coffee that I was getting all these ADD symptoms.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now. On the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and yes, he's back. No, I'm not referring to myself in the third person, even though I'm back too. I'm referring to my good buddy and a former podcast guest, a fellow biohacker and geek slash student when it comes to all things related to human body and brain performance. The previous episode that we did together, we talked about everything from digital detoxing in the hills of Costa Rica to travel proofing your immune system to underground, little-known bodyweight workouts, and a whole lot more. This cat has also introduced me to two former, really, really surprisingly popular podcast guests, a guy named Eric Remensberger, who basically healed himself of cancer using an approach of giving a big middle finger to conventional medicine and instead using alternative approaches. That was an interesting episode. And also, the guy who's with me today introduced me to Scott Dolly, who you may remember from the episode Fascial Fluffing and Protective Chakra Energy Balls. He was also an interesting fella. But my guest today is equally as interesting. He is the head of sport for Spartan Race. He is the creator of something called Runga, which you're going to learn a lot more about in today's show. He has a degree in exercise and sports science, and he's certified as a performance enhancement specialist, a corrective exercise specialist, a strength conditioning specialist. He's trained at the Czech Institute. He has more alphabet letters after his name than I do, and his name is Joe DiStefano. Joe, welcome back to the show, dude.
Hey, man. Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate the intro. And you got to add RKC to that list of the alphabet after my name there.
Okay. I actually want to ask you about this whole RKC thing. I'll have you explain what that is to people who aren't familiar with it here in a second. But based on your recommendations, because you kind of like... You're like the granddaddy of our Spartan pro race team, meaning you're always throwing little tips at us and posting things to a private Facebook group page that we have. You went on there a few weeks ago and you gave a recommendation about kettlebells. Like you were waxing positive about kettlebells. And just based off of that post and your recommendation to choose just a few key exercises and use them for mobility, use them for strength, trying to get distracted by 8 billion different moves and instead just kind of grease the groove with these specific kettlebell exercises, two to three times a week now, I've been going out on my patio in the morning, and instead of yoga or deep breathing or mobility work, I've just been doing some very light kettlebell swings, some relatively heavy but mobility enhancing Turkish get-ups, and then also some very, very deep, slow goblet squats. And I feel like a million bucks after I've gone through a few rounds of those. So I take what you have to say about kettlebells with seriousness and with heart. So tell me about this RKC, right? RKC?
Yeah, RKC. And okay. I'm glad to hear that, Ben. I think that bells are uniquely, they create such a great training adaptation, right? So we can, it's like loaded yoga. Right. So I've got some YouTube videos that I call kettlebell yoga. And like you said, it's just grease in the groove. I think that was a quote from Pavel. And they're just such a great tool to combine movement under load. So you're getting stability in the context of strength and strength in the context of stability. So the RKC, you know, is the Russian Kettlebell Challenge. Now I think they call it the Russian Kettlebell Certification. It's a tough 3 days. Dan John, one of the best, most renowned strength coaches on the planet, taught it, and I was really fortunate.
Yeah. He's been on the show before, by the way, author of Mass Made Simple.
Yeah, I mean, he is just full of just incredible insights from his career, both as an athlete and as a professional. And on top of that, he's hysterical. So he's a great guy to learn from. He just makes it so much fun.
I don't remember him being that funny during our interview. I remember him just basically intimidating everyone with his recommendation to do like insane 30 to 40 rep barbell squat sets.
Right. Well, maybe he's grown past those things now. Yeah. I feel like a lot of the stuff that he's doing now, I think he's really focusing. Him and I are really kindred in the way that we look at training today. And I think historically, maybe coming from just such a strong athletic career where I think, in Easy Strength, I think he wrote about a workout he did in 1979 where it was 30 reps at like 325 and then 30 reps at 295 and then 30 reps at 225 or something like that. So I think in his past, he's definitely, he's definitely kind of put himself through the ringer in the name of training. And maybe he's evolved this thinking now. I think over the last few years, he spent a lot of time with Gray Cook and some of those guys. So I think he's maybe he's shifted a little bit. At least from my view, he's a hysterical guy. He's got incredible stories of success and failure, and those just really add to the experience learning from him. So
now you mentioned, by the way, Joe, and I actually wanted to ask you in addition to asking you about this RKC test, but you mentioned kettlebell yoga. Did you say that you had some videos up on kettlebell yoga or that Dan did?
I do. So, I mean, Dan might too, but
okay. Walk me through kettlebell yoga. Like, how would this look just for somebody listening in? Give them the visual.
So as an example, things like halos. So that's if you were to grab a bell by the horns, which means the handles with your hands on either side, and just kind of do some halos around your head. So kind of moving your arms. So you pull your head through the window and then down the other side. That would be an example of one exercise. So you might do 10 of those. Then you might drop into a goblet squat and do 10 of those at the bottom. You might stand up and do a couple. You might do a couple hip hinges. Things like that. I've got a few circuits where we would actually go from a goblet position, drop into a reverse lunge, then onto both knees, do a hip hinge, then stand up out of that, maybe do a press or two. So it's just about this sort of fluid movement. You might grab one or two light bells, and you might just try to move for 10 minutes or so under that light load, moving in as many different controlled movements as possible or directions.
Interesting. Okay. And you have a few, can you send me some videos that I could put in the show notes for people of you demonstrating a little bit of kettlebell yoga?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Folks, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/GI Joe, because that's Joe's handle on many of his accounts. GI Joe, bengreenfieldfitness.com/GI Joe. And I'll link to those kettlebell yoga videos from Joe. Joe, in addition to the kettlebell yoga, and by the way, I sometimes feel like when I get out there on my porch and do the Turkish get-ups, it opens up my hips just as much as a full on yoga session. Just doing like 15 get ups per side, split into like three sets of five. Super duper effective. So for those of you listening in, I mean, even if you start with something as simple as a get up, go for it. But Joe, you also talked about the RKC certification, and I'd like to hear about that. And I believe it was a couple of months ago that you told me you kind of like failed certain sections of that, and you had a really hard time with it. So dig into this RKC certification, why you like it, why you feel people should look into it, and also what you experienced going through it.
Yeah, well, you know, the RKC is funny. You know, when I decided to do it again this year, I realized kind of how much I learned from it. And about 4 years ago, maybe five, I had signed up for it. And I did it pretty, it was kind of a reactive thing. I was home and I saw that it was going to be in Boston in 1 or 2 weeks time. And I just, you know, I've been through so many of these certifications and survived and always passed and always felt good about it. And so, you know, I signed up, and at the time I was doing a lot of, you know, tire flips and a lot of high intensity training. So although I hadn't been training specifically for the snatch test, which I'm sure we'll get to, I felt like I was fit and I was going to be fine. So I showed up and I got my ass kicked, man. It was about 1,000 swings a day. It was just this brutal 3-day workshop. And then at the end, everything was going well. My hands were completely shredded. But the last thing is what they call the snatch test. And I failed it.
And what is the snatch test?
So the snatch test is 100 snatches. You have 5 minutes and you use a very specific weight. So males use a 24 kilograms, 53 pounds. Women, I believe, use a 16 or 20. I'd have to check. But you have to do 100 one-arm snatches with a 5-minute time cap. You can switch hands as many times as you want. Which is a pretty burly test. If anyone's ever done 24 kilogram snatches, doing 100 of them in 5 minutes is no small feat.
Yeah, that's legit.
So I got 83. And you know what was funny is afterwards I had failed, yes, but I still expected to kind of reap the benefits of the workshop, to be totally honest. I remember when I was leaving, I went to grab a t-shirt because they had a stack of them there and people were grabbing them. And the instructor was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, you know, you didn't pass the snatch test, so not today. You don't get the red shirt." And I was shocked. I was like, "What? You know, this is outrageous." And I spent, what's so funny about it is I think I spent the next couple of months just really kind of spiteful towards them, because I watched a bunch of 190-pound guys. I think I was about 150 at the time. Bunch of 190-pound guys, 200-pound guys just rock this snatch test and using the same weight as I was. And so I had this like just pity party for the next few months. Like, I don't know how they're ever going to have an RKC under 175 pounds, because I don't personally know anybody in my weight class that could handle that test. And I think that I've got, you know, this many years of experience and I don't know how they're going to move forward. And I was so like spiteful about not passing. But as it kind of came around again this year, I kind of grew some respect for the not everybody gets a trophy mindset, right?
Yeah.
You want to do this, you got to take it seriously. And although the test is hard, I think that it's doable for anybody if you commit to it. And it's not something to be taken lightly. You can't walk in and expect to walk out. And I think there's very few things in life left like that. So it resonated with me. And when I saw Dan John was teaching it, it was a no brainer. And I pulled the trigger.
Yeah, I like it. I've looked over their registration page before, because frankly, Dragon Door, who puts on a lot of these workshops, they've reached out to me and asked me to come out to a cert sometime. And you learn everything from suitcase carries to dragon walks to single leg deadlifts to step back lunges and tactical lunges and all these different kind of old school Russian moves with the kettlebells. And then, of course, you have to pass these. I think it's a hard style push-up test and then a snatch test that you have to do.
Yeah, so you have to pass almost every major exercise, right? So you might learn the one leg deadlift and stuff. Those aren't going to be tested, but you have to pass the clean, the snatch, the get up, the press, the goblet squat. I believe the double bell front squat, And then the snatch test, which is a performance test. And yeah, I think there's some push-up tests and things like that. They do a really good job at sneaking those assessments throughout the weekend. So there's a few that they sneak in and mark you as passed or failed that you might not have even, you might not have noticed that that was a test. But the snatch test is the one truly performance-based test. So the rest are skill-based. So can you do a perfect get-up? Can you do a perfect press? But yeah, that snatch test is something you need to train for.
Now, one of the things that you said, not to kick the kettlebell horse to death too much, but you talked a little bit when you were giving all of us pro Spartan athletes some tips on our Facebook page about some other little things that you took away from Dan John, that certification. And I believe that, well, there were two big takeaways. One was you talked a little bit about like the number of reps that you thought people should really be doing when strength training. And the other was how it relates to, I know a lot of our audience, they do running or they do marathoning or triathlon or Spartan racing or something like that. Why would kettlebells be something that would be beneficial for something like that? So kind of a two-part question. Like, tell me what you were kind of harping on when it comes to sets and reps, and then also where's the crossover there that you think is so beneficial for somebody like an endurance athlete?
Right, Ben. So yeah, you know, I think Dan has this, and it's so funny how the universe works, right? Like sometimes you know, and I know you've dealt with this, is you've got an idea in your head and you're kind of moving your training in a certain direction. And then you hear something that sort of just it kickstarts you, right? So it's like you suspected you might be onto something, and then somebody you really respect says something that just kind of catapults you in that direction. And that was my experience with Dan John. And he has a rule of 10. So his theory with his athletes is that if the weight is appropriate, you probably can't do more than 10 really good reps. And whether you do five sets of two or two sets of five or a set of five, a set of three and a set of two or whatever it might be, there's 10 good reps in the tank. And that's what training is all about. It's about those 10 reps. So I kind of took that into the context of what we're seeing at Spartan. And I think that if you look at the rates of injuries, right, in Spartan race or in endurance sports, in Jay Dykeres, I'm not sure exactly how to say his name, Anatomy for Runners, he talks about how 82% of runners get hurt. And it's like, geez, imagine if football was that high or car accidents or what have
That's
you.
That's what it is, 82%?
82% of runners get hurt. So if you imagine, like I said, anything else in life with that kind of stat, it would be considered the most dangerous activity on the planet. But we take it for granted and we move forward. But I think that Spartan over the years, there's sort of two pieces of this. Number one is we've got 200 races this year, and the first place prize is going to be anywhere from $500 to $3,000. So there's an incentive to run as much as possible. So that could be dangerous for an athlete trying to make ends meet on an athlete income, right? And then the other piece is because the event is scary and it has running, but it also has some heavy lifts. I think athletes took that as, well, I need to train as an endurance athlete and a strength athlete at the same time.
Right.
And one of the lessons that, you know, we all know and we all learn, but we all try to forget is that you can't really get good at more than one thing at once. You can't get significantly stronger and faster at the same time. And in my training of OCR athletes and Spartan athletes, I think what's interesting about that is there's two reasons. One reason is that the level of work it takes to improve in one of those areas makes it challenging to recover from. So if you're doing two things simultaneously as a high-end athlete, you might get away with it for a little while, but you can't get away with it forever because over time you just can't recover from intense strength training and intense endurance training simultaneously. And that's, again, one of the things that I think is leading to injury. And the other thing that's interesting about that point is if you're getting better at both simultaneously, then you're not all that close to your potential in that realm, right? So if my body could at some point in my life deadlift 500 pounds, if I'm less than, say, 3/4 of the way there, I might actually be able to improve. But if I'm even 3/4. I don't have the exact number, but if I'm the closer I am to my genetic potential in one of those realms, the more I have to just focus on it and not focus on anything else specifically. So I guess we don't have to go down that rabbit hole too long, but that's my hypothesis about that.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I mean, most of the evidence that I've seen on combining strength exercise with endurance exercise is kind of what you've alluded to, and it may sound simple and stupid, but that is that you can't get as strong as possible when you're training for endurance, and you can't get the increase in mitochondria and oxygen consumption necessary for endurance when all you're focusing on is strength. That's why I do like this idea of keeping the strength and the endurance somewhat separate for many of your sessions, and having that time when you devote yourself purely to kettlebell, having that time when you devote yourself purely to things like running efficiency and running economy. And then I also like having those, you know, especially for like a Spartan athlete, those couple of workouts or more per week where you are combining the two, but it's more like running and stopping for burpees, or running and stopping to drag a sandbag for a distance, and not necessarily running and then engaging in some extremely biomechanically complex exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that I've kind of done it, if we're going to try to do concurrent training, is sort of assess the athlete, right? So look at their power, look at their strength, look at their endurance, if we distill it to the simplest kind of variables. And whatever their weakest link is, that becomes priority one. Whatever the worst is priority three, and then there's priority two. And then from a training perspective, they might get a whole bunch of training plan, workout, a whole bunch of workouts and a whole bunch of different complexes. And the rules are simple. A lot of times it's do one of these workouts 2 to 3 days a week, do one of these workouts 2 to 3 days a week. And the only rule is that a priority one workout has to be at your best condition. So you can't have the effects of a priority two or three workout impact your performance in a priority one workout. And as long as you abide by that simple principle, you can run concurrent training pretty well.
Yeah. And by the way, most of the evidence on concurrent training to date, based on the most recent analyses that have been done on this idea of athletes who combine strength training or just exercise enthusiasts in general. I know everybody listening in, you're not like a professional Spartan athlete or triathlete or something like that. But this idea behind doing strength training and doing endurance training all in the same training program on a weekly basis, what they've shown is that for strength and power athletes, you do see a pretty significant reduction in strength and power and muscle hypertrophy associated with resistance training, or normally associated with resistance training, when you add in a lot of endurance training or you add in a lot of high intensity interval sessions. On the flip side, what they've shown with endurance trainers or endurance athletes is that when you add in the strength training, you don't see as much of a deficit in the endurance response. You get an enhancement of strength and power and muscle and even your basal metabolic rate because of the addition of lean muscle fibers, but you don't see as much of a decrease in actual endurance performance when kind of the tables are turned. So it appears to be more beneficial for endurance athletes to do strength training than it is for strength athletes to do endurance training, with the exception of that being that a lot of times you can avoid some of the deleterious effects of endurance training on strength training when you do very, very short efforts, like 10 to 30 second high intensity interval training efforts. You can still maintain a pretty good aerobic capacity as a strength athlete and not have endurance hold you back. So that's some of the latest on concurrent training that I'm aware of. Joe, quick question for you before we move on. You mentioned 10 reps as being something that that Dan John talked about. Is that 10 reps total for any given exercise, or is that 10 reps for a set?
So that would be 10 reps of a given exercise, right? So just yesterday I'm testing out a new block of training right now. And so it's kind of based in this principle. And I think it's going to be how I'm going to structure a lot of the off-season training for this coming year for the OCR athletes I work with. But so I would do 2 to 3 warm-up sets of 5 to 10 reps, and then start the 10 quality reps okay. that are considered workout.
I was going to say that makes sense, because in Dan John's book, the warm-ups are pretty comprehensive. When you get to the actual set, a lot of times you're only doing just one single set. But what you're saying is, you know, I could do, let's say I was going to do Turkish get-ups. I could do five sets of two per side, or I could do two sets of five per side. But according to Dan John, if you're using adequate weight, 10 reps, no matter what your set rep scheme, should be about the most that you could handle with quality reps. But that doesn't include the warm-up.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
It does not include the warm-up. And that actually, the only exception to that is if you're doing singles. So the 10 rep, I believe that the 10 rep kind of hypothesis thrives in doubles and singles. So things like five sets of two, or a set of five and then a set of three and then a set of two.
Right.
I think the one exception, if you are doing singles, because there's, according to Dan, if you're doing singles, you want to just do six. If you're doing really heavy stuff, then you can't expect more than six quality reps.
Like six sets of one rep.
Six sets of one.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Okay. So for those of you listening in, if you want to go to this RKC certification, I'm going to do one at some point in 2018. I have it on the radar. I mean, for me, I'm lucky. Dragon Door actually reached out and I think they wanted to kind of like comp me one just to go somewhere and do it. So I'll take him up on that at some point in 2018. But one other thing before I jump into another question about your training, a really interesting and unique approach to your training that you've recently told me about, Joe, have you seen, because I know he's on our Spartan Pro team and he's like one of the top obstacle racing athletes in the world, but have you seen Hobie Call's DVD on Amazon called How to Train for Obstacle Course Racing?
I think he made that thing like in 2012.
Okay. I got it and I watched it, and it like when we're talking about concurrent training, like here's an example. He'll just go for like a run for like an hour and a half with a heavy rock, and pretty much the whole it's not even a run, it's like a walk. It's like a heavy rock walk, and he'll just walk and throw the rock and then crawl to the rock and then pick up the rock and turn around backwards and throw the rock and do 10 burpees, then walk to the rock again and throw and just walk along and walk along with this rock. And it's the most hilarious video ever because he's got like the music behind it, you know, almost like dun dun da 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 dun dun da da, and it's just him throwing the rock, walking to the rock, throwing the rock. It's actually there's some gold in that video too, though. He gets into like how he does his treadmill sprints wearing a weighted vest, and he does a copious number of walking lunges, and he does almost no endurance work and almost all focused speed work with a weighted vest, and then these weird things thrown in like going on a walk with a rock. But anyways, kind of a rabbit hole, but I just thought I'd mention that I saw that DVD recently. It's actually kind of interesting.
Oh my gosh, I've seen bits and pieces of it, not for years though. But Hobie is, I mean, he's a special case. I mean, he's a guy, I think he said he ran his first marathon at 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He has the world record. I don't think it was sanctioned by Guinness, but he beat the world record for walking lunges. He walking lunged knee to ground, full reps, 1 mile in the low 20s, 23 minutes maybe.
Yeah. And you know what? It actually makes sense, his idea about walking lunges being one of the best low impact ways to strengthen your legs. We used to do copious numbers of walking lunges when I played collegiate tennis, and our team had incredibly strong legs. I mean, we would do walking lunges for like 35, 45 minutes after practice, just walking around as the coach lectured to us. We'd just be doing walking lunges around the court. And they are a good exercise. One of the things that you told me, Joe, was that your training is kind of interesting these days in that you're doing a ton of, and this might sound like it's a counterintuitive approach to this idea of low rep, high weight, high quality kettlebell training. But you said to me, you've been doing a lot of high volume, low intensity. Can you get into what you mean by that and how you're incorporating that into your training routine? Because it sounds like you're having a lot of success with it.
Yeah, man, I feel pretty fit right now. And I just switched my training to test out this this rule of 10, because I do think my interest is sparked enough in it to really be considering using it for a lot of the athletes in the off season. So I just shifted my training. But when I was preparing for the RKC, I was kind of looking at it. And, you know, the 24 kg kettlebell, I mean, still, I just did snatches with it this morning. I mean, it never gets easy. It's, you know, it's a weight that, it's appreciable and it takes no prisoners. So, when I went into the RKC before, I just got so gassed, just like if anybody's ever done the 5 minute burpee test, and actually it kind of ties into what you just were talking about. So, 5 minutes, that's an aerobic bout. Right. So I decided that I was going to have to get aerobically capable of handling a 24 kilogram kettlebell. I wasn't going to try to do the, put it down, do a few reps, get super acidic, and then try to do a few more and try to do that for 5 minutes, because that is just misery. I kind of decided I need to be able to keep this thing moving for as many of those minutes as possible. And one of the kind of insights to that, kind of tying into your walking lunge approach, was last year when I was looking at the NBC TV show stats, the heavy carries at Spartan Race are often won by the best endurance athlete, right? So I think if we were just to talk about, you know, who's going to win an 80-pound up a hill bucket carry, is it going to be the 185-pound guy, or is it going to be Hobie? Is it going to be the 140-pound guy? And I think most people, if it's carrying an 80-pound bucket, would assume the big guy would win. But the big guy cramps up. The big guy moves slower. The big guy's great for 2 minutes. But if it's a 7 to 9 minute bucket carry, the little guy's going to win, because the little guy is using aerobic energy to control that bucket. And so that was really interesting to me to see that. And so I got obsessed with this idea kind of over the course of the year that everything in Spartan needs to be aerobic. And then I started to dabble with this 10-minute approach, like anything in Spartan, any strength training I need to be able to do for 10 minutes. So if it's a kettlebell swing, if it's a rowing machine, I mean, I would never get on a rowing machine or a fan bike or anything else for less than 10 minutes, because that's the time domain where magic happens. And that's both directly to the obstacles, but also just
you mean once you've exceeded 10 minutes, that's the time domain where magic happens from an aerobic standpoint.
Well, yes, but I think that also just that 10-minute mark, it's sort of, if you can handle something for 10 minutes, I think that that's a pretty good indicator. If it's challenging, it's a pretty good indicator of your strength endurance. So if you do it for 25 minutes or an hour, I mean, that's full-on aerobic. But I think it really kind of breaks through this metabolic demand, and it kind of gets the body, let's talk about a kettlebell swing, right? So if I'm doing kettlebell swings for 10 minutes, that is an aerobic activity. Now, I'm not going to try to swing a kettlebell for 25 minutes. So I just decided that things like carries, things like swings, they were going to revolve around that time frame. And then when I signed up for the RKC and I knew it was a 5-minute test, I dropped a lot of those numbers to 5 minutes, and I would do multiple rounds. So it would be, my carries would then be, say, 212-kilo kettlebells, and I would do 5-minute carries with them. If I jumped on the fan bike, it would be maybe 20 rounds of 5 minutes at a certain intensity. If I was doing snatches, it would be 5-minute blocks.
20 rounds of 5 minutes?
Yeah.
So you're on the bike like the whole day.
No big deal. Put a minute between each.
Oh, okay. So you've got pretty short recoveries, going full aerobic. So what right. You're saying, if I understand correctly, is that you're doing like steady state aerobic work for 10 plus minute, or for 5 to 10 plus minute intervals, as an integral part of your training program every day?
Yes, for a long time.
Wow.
And that was testing this hypothesis. And when I signed up for the RKC, I shifted that to 5 minutes.
Okay. With the hypothesis being what again?
Just trying to maximize the aerobic contribution to my strength, right?
Okay.
So not trying to get stronger unless I could sustain it. And I know this might seem weird, or it might seem kind of off the beaten path, or maybe it sounds silly to some people, but it really was transformational for me, because now, you know, if I'm doing something, it's the work doesn't begin until the second minute or the third minute. And I think for an aerobic athlete, that's really important. And the other thing is, you know, just like Hobie, you know, if Hobie wants to go toss a rock for 4 hours or 2 hours or however long it is, he's got, you know, 30 years of marathons and things like that under his belt already to kind of build from. And I think that's part of the reason. Whereas my approach, you know, I've done a lot of strength training, I've done a lot of deadlifts, so I've got some maximal strength. I've definitely got more than a double body weight deadlift. And so I'm kind of now kind of shifting that into strength endurance. So kind of dovetailing our early conversation, if someone doesn't have as much strength as a baseline, then maybe this would be tricky. But I'm definitely a believer in it.
Okay. So the way that I position this, because, you know, I work with a lot of people who are just looking at anti-aging and longevity and wanting to, you know, look good naked and live a long time and aren't necessarily racing for Spartan. The way that I program this is I call it stamina. And the way that I do it is typically once a week to once every 2 weeks in the program of the clients who I coach who fall into that category, I simply have one workout that involves a combination of load and endurance, right? They're putting on a weighted vest and going for a long fasted hike on a Saturday morning, or they are taking like Don Wildman, this guy who they did a feature on in Esquire magazine, the former owner of Bally's Fitness. He has this workout that he does for about 2 hours in his basement. He actually does it three times a week, but it's essentially kind of like light to medium resistance weight training over and over and over again from machine to machine to machine, never letting the lactic acid kind of decrease from building up in the muscle. Or, you know, occasionally it'll be a new sport that I have someone go and play for a couple of hours under load, you know, like some kind of like a rowing or a paddleboarding or something like that. But it kind of sounds similar to this concept that I have of working in something that requires stamina and this mix of strength and endurance at least once per week, so that you're targeting that energy system that a lot of like CrossFitters don't target, for example, because they don't really go for 1 to 2 hours in many cases. And also that endurance athletes don't target a lot of times because they'll go for a long time, but then not under load. So it's that combination of, it sounds to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong, going for a long time and like having something heavy on your body when you're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so some of the workouts, right, just to kind of add some color, one of the workouts I would do all the time would be step ups. And my push-up pull-up concept, where you do two push-ups, then one pull-up, and then you would repeat that for maybe 3 minutes or 4 minutes, depending on how long that particular interval is. So let's say it's a step-up, it's a push-up pull-up, and then it's a fan bike. It might be a five-minute fan bike right into a three-minute push-up pull-up and a two-minute step-up, and then back on the five-minute fan bike, right? So, and during that time, I think the most important thing here is to calibrate with a very specific measure of performance. So it might be 24 or 26 or 28 steps a minute on the step-ups, depending on the athlete, and it might be 6, 8 to 10 rounds a minute of the two push-ups and one pull-up throughout that time. So hopefully that makes sense. So if I'm doing a 3 minute block of push-ups and pull-ups and it's 8 rounds a minute, then I've got to do 24 rounds in those 3 minutes. And then I got to do 2 minutes of 24 steps a minute on the stair, which is 24 inches. And then I got to maintain whatever it is, 65 RPM on the fan bike for the next 5 minutes. And I might do that for an hour.
For some reason, I had the impression that you were doing a lot of this high volume, low intensity stuff while at work, like while working on your computer or taking phone calls or things like that. Are you doing this stuff while you're actually working, or is this like an actual workout where the phone's off and you're not working, you're just working out?
Well, yeah. So that's kind of the other piece of it. I've now basically put a fan bike almost everywhere that I frequent. And if I'm on the phone, I'm on the bike.
By the way, a fan bike being like an air assault or an air dyne type of bike.
Right. So I've got,
those are hard.
They're hard. They're very hard. I particularly don't gravitate towards the assault bike. I've got two air dyne AD fours, which are the old air dynes with the big flywheel. And then I've got two AD pros, which are the new ones, which I really like.
They're amazing bikes. Like for those of you who are looking for an amazing piece of exercise equipment, like, in my opinion, for a full body workout like that or a rowing machine, less than $1,000 on Amazon, you got like a full gym pretty much, aside from something heavy.
Yeah, no, if you're a guy and you've got a 20 and a 24 kg kettlebell on a fan bike, or if you're a woman and you've got a 16 and a 20, or maybe a 24 or two, if you're strong and a fan bike, I mean, you're good to go. And last time we spoke, Ben, we were talking about the ski erg, and I also have one of those. I love the ski erg. I think one of the reasons why I've gravitated towards the fan bike is just that, like you said, I can literally be on the phone. Whereas the ski erg, it's a training tool. It's hard to multitask on it, both because you can't sustain a conversation and your head's moving all over the place and everything else. So in the convenience of my life, I spend 5 or 6 hours a day on the phone for work, and now I'm on the bike for a lot of that time. So, So yeah, I mean, my goal is to accumulate 10 hours a week on the fan bike, which sometimes I hit, and usually it's
10 hours a week. That's a pretty solid goal. Yeah, I mean, what I tell people when they ask me which piece of cardio equipment could give them the most bang for their buck, the Airdyne or the bike with the, you know, with the arms and the legs is always up there. As silly as it is, the elliptical trainer with the arms and the legs, that thing can give you a pretty killer workout when you really get pumping on it. So that's another one. Huge fan of any rowing machine, although for a lot of people who struggle with like low back issues or who are sitting with their hip flexor shortened already on airplanes or at desks, I'm not as big of a fan of that approach versus like an, you know, like an Airdyne bike where you can kind of lean back on. And then also the VersaClimber, and then kind of like a close cousin to this VersaClimber in a way, I suppose, because you're vertically up and down. The ski erg that you talked about. So for those of you listening in, as far as like best bang for your buck cardio machines, if you aren't just going to go for a hike in the friggin' woods, would be one of those, in my opinion. Joe, a few other things that I wanted to ask you about that kind of are going to stray away from exercise. The first is this whole no alcohol thing. Last time I talked to you, you were swearing off alcohol. How'd that go for you?
It went awesome till the Dry Farm Wines party at Paleo FX. so it was a great experience. You know, it's I think a lot of us were in this health and wellness world, but because we're in this world and because we travel a lot and because we have a lot of meetings, we end up in scenarios a lot where we frankly drink too much. And I think that that doesn't mean we're getting drunk, but I mean, if you've got three dinners a week with different people, you're probably having a glass of wine. You're probably, you know, maybe you're grabbing a beer. And I think that I just kind of had a realization that I didn't want to do it anymore. And I wanted to see what my body was capable of if I completely gave it up. And it was also kind of a, just a test for my own sake, because it's not easy to be the guy at the table that says, I'm good. I'll stick with this soda water and stevia. Right. So I immediately, within like 2 weeks of absolutely no alcohol, I felt a difference. And again, it's not like I was drinking all that much, but I think my sleep improved, my consciousness. I would wake up in the morning completely clear, and even having just one drink at night definitely affects your sleep. So I started to get, you know, it was great. Did a couple months. It was also during a really tough training block right before the RKC. So it was a good time to do it. I'm still doing it. The only difference is I've now incorporated some Dry Farm wines.
Right. Those being like the micro filtered wines produced using like the old world methods where you're not getting a lot of sulfites added. They're filtering out like the 80 plus chemical derivatives that would normally be allowed in wine. And I believe, I don't do the Dry Farm as much as I use this brand called Fit Vine. But they, you know, they filter it through like diatomaceous earth, and the grapes are grown at this really high altitude to eliminate the potential for mycotoxins or fungi, and also to concentrate the antioxidants. And yeah, you feel a lot different when you drink that wine. It almost doesn't count as alcohol, almost.
Right. A lot of it is lower in alcohol too. So a lot of these wines are 12% or something.
Actually, that's the thing about the Fit Vine wine. It's like 13 or 14% because they ferment a lot of the sugars out of it. So it's lower in sugar, higher in alcohol, which I give a big thumbs up to. If I'm going to have a glass of wine, I want it to spin some dials in my brain, baby,
right,
and not have a lot of sugar in it. But that's just me. There was this guy who we did a two-part series on the show with, Jason Sissel, who did 30 days of no alcohol. And I don't know if you remember that, but we took him through Wellness FX. We hooked him up with Wellness FX. We took all of his blood parameters, and I'll link to this in the show notes. If you guys go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/GI Joe, you can view the results from this guy. But his triglycerides plummeted. His vitamin D went through the roof. His sleep score, especially like his deep sleep score and his propensity to fall asleep at like between 1 and 3 a.m. disappeared. And his deep sleep score went way up. His testosterone went up. His liver enzymes, of course, plummeted. His thyroid increased. I mean, it was pretty crazy what happened after just 30 days of no alcohol. So it's a challenge that I would issue to anyone out there. Although I'm doing something different right now, Joe, like we were talking about before we started recording, is I'm not doing much coffee right now.
Man, that's not something I'm ready to give up.
Well, I went to New York City and I hung out with this chef named David Boulay, who's big into Japanese cuisine. And this dude's got like these like tiny little bags of Japanese green tea that cost like $200 from some, you know, random mountaintop pagoda in Japan. And he's showing me how to prepare them and how to measure the water out and get it between 140 and 150 degrees Fahrenheit. And you use these special pots to put it in. You only brew it for like 60 to 90 seconds. And then you pour it into a glass and there's like a whole drinking ceremony that you do. And it's almost kind of Zen.
Yeah.
And it's also, I mean, I like a good coffee, and I'll come right out and say it. I'm in the process, hopefully here at some point, of developing like a new coffee for my company. But at the same time, I wanted to see what it would feel like to just quit coffee for a while. So I've been on this green tea kick and I feel pretty good. And I've been tweeting out a lot of these studies on the EGCG, the epigallo catechins in green tea. And in terms of accelerated lipid turnover and drop in triglycerides and an increase in a lot of different hormones responsible primarily for the burning of adipose tissue and the activation of lipase, along with a lot of the cognitive benefits, there's a lot going for green tea. So, I mean, even if you're going to do like maybe green tea in the morning and coffee after lunch, I'm liking this idea of tea in the morning. So It's just I'm drinking this super high quality Japanese green tea. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, man. I think it sounds like that tea is amazing. Granted, it might break the bank, but
yeah, he gave me a few bags for free. Once those run out, we'll see how long that habit sticks.
So I would consider, and I think that sometimes I do green tea in the afternoon, but I think coffee in the morning is just it just gets the brain going, right? You know what's so funny is, when I was a kid, you know, I was one of the kids that was always told that I should be on ADD medicine and I'm, you know, jumping off the walls and everything else. And, you know, what's funny about that is ADD medicine is actually, you know, they're all stimulants. And, a couple of years ago I tried to give up coffee and after a couple of weeks, I noticed just my productivity. I had a really hard time focusing and everything else. And I did not think I was drinking tea or something lighter. And I totally did not even consider that it was the fact that I had given up coffee, that I was getting all these ADD symptoms. And I was talking to somebody and they're like, well, you know, what have you done different? You know, what's going on? And I'm like, the only thing is I gave up coffee. And they were like, switch to espresso, have two shots in the morning and see what happens. And lo and behold, I'm cured all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. You know, that was it. So I think that that was kind of an interesting experience for me. And I think that coffee, really good coffee, is important, because I think if it's burnt or if it's not good coffee or it's paper filter, if it's
right,
paper filter, then all of a sudden you're kind of worse than you would otherwise be. But I think that
yeah,
it's the potency of a really strong coffee in the morning. I think it's just critical to productivity. And I'm not sure I would get that from green tea, although maybe you can prove me wrong at some point.
I do a lot of green tea, and I was actually just posting this on my, I did a Facebook Live this morning about what you just alluded to, the paper filters, and the fact that that is important. If you use a paper filter, you filter out a lot of the psychoactive components in coffee, the cholesterols, like the caffeol and the caffestol is one, and another one is the caweol. And these are cholesterols that, yes, slightly increase your blood cholesterol levels. Not that that's an unhealthy thing or associated with heart disease and the absence of other risk factors, but they cross your blood-brain barrier and they actually improve the ability of coffee to induce wakefulness compared to, say, if you filter through a paper filter. So like a French press or an AeroPress with the steel filter, or any other method that doesn't use a paper filter will actually give you a little bit more of a cognitive boost from coffee. And I, by the way, do not plan on giving up coffee for good. There's something about that comfort food aspect of coffee that I just can't get away from. Even if green tea could do all the psychoactive parts of it for me, I love that cup of coffee. So, and I know you're complete. If you guys listen to the other episode I did with Joe, and I'll link to that, we geek out on coffee for a while and his different preparation methods. So go listen to that one, because I have another question for you, Joe, and that is sleep habits. Mm. You like have status on every freaking airline on the planet because all you do is travel around the world going to Spartan races or going to these certifications or setting up this Runga thing that we'll talk about in a little bit. What are some of your top sleep tips for people? Because I know you're always exploring this stuff.
Yeah, you know, sleep is just, it's so important. And I don't know if you remember, Ben, but when we first met, whenever it was that day, I think it was at the Ancestral Health Symposium.
I remember exactly where we met. Yeah, we met at the Ancestral Health Symposium in Berkeley, California, and we had a discussion about sleep.
Right, because I was struggling at that time. And it was after, again, like you said, quite a bit of travel and blah, 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 blah. And I'm happy to report I just hit Mosaic on JetBlue. So now my, you know, my travel experience is going to be that much better.
But Mosaic?
Yeah, Mosaic. It took a long time.
Well, what's that mean?
It means I get free drinks if I want them.
So it's like status.
It's you get the eat early boarding, speed pass, whatever they call it. So it's great. You get the even more space seats, but actually I just flew from LA to Boston and some JetBlue flights now have something called Mint, which is like JetBlue first class, which is extremely awesome. Yeah, it's fancy schmancy. So anyways, so I think, you know, what's interesting is, I think number one, light is just so powerful. So I think one is I've been wearing the Swannies quite a bit, and these are something that you introduced me to as well. And
the Swannies blue light blocking glasses.
Yes. And what's funny about the Swannies, Ben, is that for years, you know, I believed in two things. Number one is, all right, like the blue light thing, you know, I'll make sure I get, the bulletproof thing for my screen on my iPhone before iPhone had that option of getting rid of it. But I just, like, you know, I got some $2 construction glasses that are orange. Like, these are going to be fine. And it's a notable difference with the Swannies. I'm not really sure what they did, but they're definitely more effective at making you tired more quickly than $2 construction glasses that happen to be orange.
Yeah, I mean, my kids wore them, dude. They have little kid Swannies. They actually make some pretty freaking fashionable versions for kids, and my kids wear them every night.
Right, and I think what's awesome about the Swannies too is it's a little bit of a stoic exercise, because when you're in public, you look like a weirdo. And yeah.
It's birth control for your head.
Yeah, man, totally. It's when I'm traveling, I got my Jumanji hat on with my Swannies, and you know, it's nighttime in Los Angeles. People are, you know, not many people are striking up conversations with me. So not that I
you're that creeper.
Embarrassment is what people fear most, and I think that's probably Swannies' biggest opposition, right? Is that people don't
public. But let's face it. I mean, most of the people listening into the podcast right now, they know that they should be blocking blue light for sleep. I mean, is there anything else that you've been doing that you would say is a little bit more fringe or flies under the radar or that would surprise people?
Yeah. So CBD, I think we've talked about as well. I'm not sure if we talked about it last time, but it's one of my go-tos now at Paleo Effects. I was introduced to the guys at Omeka Organics, which is, I mean, their quality is extremely high. And their CBD is tremendous.
I buy their stevia. I didn't know they made a CBD.
Yeah, they've got a
really?
CBD that is CBD tonic.
I mean, granted, I make a CBD too. My company makes a CBD, so that's probably why. I stay pretty horse with blinders on with my own product. But I didn't know they made a CBD. That's interesting. Is it one of those CBDs that you could buy anywhere in the world?
Legally. I think you'll have some trouble finding it. You can get it on their website. I actually kind of stocked up, and I do love your product, Ben. You got me hooked. But then I had an opportunity to get a large amount for a low cost at Paleo Effects. So
yeah,
a little bit. But it's got lavender in it.
By the way, for getting yourself off of alcohol or weed or any other drug, like targeting the endocannabinoid system via it's technically like a CB1 or a CB2 antagonist, like CBD. It works like gangbusters. I mean, if you're listening and you're like, I don't want to drink coffee, or I want to try this 30 days no alcohol thing, like that's a really good way to do it, is to hit the endocannabinoid system, especially for the sleep component.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And make sure you go through, like, pick up Ben's CBD or Omeka's or whatever. There's a lot of CBD products coming out now, and having kind of dabbled with a few of them, I'm not quite sure of both the quality and the if they've been third party tested.
Yeah, some of them will get you high. That's a pretty good sign. They may not have been third party tested. Because I've had some people, because they know I'm in the CBD business, they'll send me CBD and I'll take like the equivalent amount I'd normally take, at, you know, right before I go to bed or whatever, and I'll wake up high and I'll be like, that definitely was not just CBD. So yeah, you have to be careful. But I do like Omica Organics. And by the way, Joe, have you ever tried their butterscotch toffee stevia?
Yeah, man. Their stevia, I mean, they're not using, and you could probably speak to this more clearly, but their stevia doesn't have that what's that in my mouth aftertaste. It's something to do with the fact that they don't use hexane.
They don't use hexane. They don't blend it with maltodextrin. It's like a really good, clean form of stevia. And yes, if you work at Omica Organics or own it and you're listening in, you can send your check later on for the podcast sponsorship. Exactly. So, Joe, what about in addition to using something like CBD and blue light blocking, is there any third thing that you'd throw at us for sleep enhancement that you've been doing lately?
Yeah, I've been kind of obsessed with breath for a long time. When we go free diving or what have you, we talked about apnea tables and things like that. I think that breath is just every day I'm more impressed with just how deep it can penetrate into our health. And so whether it's on planes or whether it's in the office or wherever it might be, sneak 10 minutes and do some quick breathing exercises. And I think for me, being a guy that, I'm pretty high energy and I have trouble calming down sometimes, things like apnea tables are just extremely effective. So what that means is you might hold your breath for 30 seconds and then breathe for 30 seconds, hold your breath for 30 seconds, breathe for 30 seconds. And as you kind of improve, you can exaggerate either one of those sides of the coin. But I think that sort of breath control, deep breathing, long exhalations, that just completely calms the nervous system. And I think that's probably one of the biggest pieces that I'd recommend that people do, because we all have too much on our mind, especially at night. And, it's just a great way to calm ourselves in combination with, quit watching crime dramas and turn off your social media and stuff that I'm positive you've talked about quite a bit.
Yeah. The breath work is really amazing. And of course there's all sorts of different things that you can combine that with like a sauna or cold, et cetera. But these sleep apnea tables, they actually make apps that walk you through them. And the thing that I like most about using these apps that will say, it'll give me a little ding or a little vibration when you're supposed to hold your breath and then when you're supposed to breathe. And typically there's two different forms of apnea training. One is you hold your breath for increasingly longer periods of time and you keep the interval in between each breath hold constant, right? So you hold your breath for 45 seconds, rest 30, 60 seconds, rest 30, a minute 15, rest 30, so on and so forth. That's called oxygen-based apnea training. And then you can also do the thing where you hold your breath for a certain period of time. You keep the breath holds constant, like a minute every time, but then you decrease your recovery periods. So you would hold for a minute and then recover for a minute, then hold for a minute and recover for 50 seconds, then hold for a minute and recover for 40 seconds. And it's not something you'd want to do while operating heavy machinery or driving, but even for something like a walk or multitasking while you're watching a movie, for example, or doing anything where you can just hold your breath, or even on like a recovery day where you just want to work your breath. It's a pretty cool way to train. I'll try and find a link for the app that I use. I have a static apnea app on my phone. I'll try and find a link to that and put it in the show notes for you guys. But yeah, I'm on board with you, Joe, that breath work, and especially like working in things like that prior to sleep, can be super, super effective. A lot of people just don't breathe when they get into bed, which is, and they instead, take Valium or Ambien or try all these different sleep supplements or sleep techniques, when sometimes all you got to do is just like lay there for 10 minutes, work on your breath. It's crazy.
100%. And my suspicion right now is, like you just alluded to, the CO2 tolerance stuff is, I think, where it's at. That's at least my current kind of idea. So the reduction in rest period, say keep the hold at a minute or however long you can hold it for comfortably, and reduce that the rest period from say a minute, and then you can reduce it by 10 seconds across time. And I suspect that getting more CO2 tolerant is sort of where a lot of people need to go.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so in addition to these breath hold apps and CBD and blue light blocking, are there any other kind of like supplements that you've incorporated or found a lot of success with since our last chat?
Yeah, let's see. I got a couple
things just came in the mail today, so I'm looking at them. Liposomal vitamin C. I just met Eric the other day, actually, who you alluded to in my introduction. And he's got me doing a weekly high dose of vitamin C. I'm gonna try that. So I've been taking a gram a day off and on. I'll do like a 3 month block and then take a
gram is not that high for liposomal, dude.
No. That's just been my sort of routine.
Well, I would recommend if you want to experiment with high dose vitamin C, which by the way, I should warn you guys not to do this in conjunction with hard training because it can blunt some of the hormetic response to training. So if you do this, you'd want to like take your vitamin C on a recovery day so that your body still is able to produce its own endogenous antioxidants on your training day. Or else, let's say you're training in the morning, save your vitamin C for example, the evening after your body has had its own chance to mount its own inflammatory response. But that being said, your body can actually absorb close to about 5 grams of vitamin C a day in about 1 to 2 gram portions. So you can do like a few, for example, a typical high dose vitamin C protocol orally would be like taking 1.5 grams of a liposomal form of vitamin C 3 times a day, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think that's where I'm going to shift to. I think I'm going to do, and you can let me know what you think of this, but I think I'm going to take it once a week and I'll drop like 10 grams.
And that's something you can do. That works with vitamin D too. That's usually something someone will do because of the absorption issue, because your gut can only take on about 1.5 grams at a time. That's usually what someone will do with like a Myers cocktail injection or vitamin C IV therapy, which is very easy to hunt down in most cities these days.
Yeah. So we'll dabble with that. And then, you know, when I travel, I'll do, you know, all sorts of stuff. I'll take some glutathione before the flight, about half an hour before the flight. When I'm on the flight, I still use the oregano oil. I take some charcoal when I land and maybe a little more glutathione. Day to day, coffee, and I've been actually dabbling with Keto Prime, which is Bulletproof's new product, which I'm really liking, and I'm wondering if it's some kind of placebo or if this stuff really rocks. But it's the oxalo acetate that I think they used to have in their anti-aging product.
Oxalo acetate is really interesting stuff. I mean, it can accelerate the rate at which you burn ketones, and so technically it can cause you to shove more fatty acids through that cycle. It's got some other cool properties as well in terms of being able to, it acts on a glutamate, I believe. It's a glutamate, what would be called like a scavenger, meaning that it can convert glutamate into other things like aspartate and alanine, kind of have like this sports performance enhancing effect, and, you know, reduce signs and symptoms of like brain injuries and TBIs and stuff like that. But with that particular supplement, Keto Prime, they're combining the oxaloacetate with like ketones and things like that, right? Like exogenous ketones?
Yeah. So absolutely. There's some vitamin C in it. There's some B12 in it. There's not a lot of the exogenous ketones in here, though. It's not like the OS stuff.
Okay. Gotcha. The other interesting thing about ketones, and I just released a blog post about this today, is there's some fascinating new research about ketones and longevity, meaning like even if you're not restricting carbohydrates and you're just like taking exogenous ketones as a supplement, there's this gene called FOXO. Like it's the same gene that you hear, for example, Dr. Rhonda Patrick talk about when she discusses like the longevity enhancing benefits of a sauna. You know, and all these studies in Finland that have shown people live longer when they do the sauna. One reason for that is this protein called FOXO is getting enhanced and activated, and calorie restriction can do the same thing, and cold exposure can do the same thing. But now it turns out that regardless of whether you're restricting calories or whether you are eating carbohydrates or not eating carbohydrates, just the simple act of consuming an exogenous ketone source, like one of these beta hydroxybutyrate salts, you know, there's a lot of companies that sell them now, like Prove It and Keto One, and I think Bulletproof might have one as well. But there's this longevity effect that up until pretty recently was not really known when it comes to ketos. So that's another interesting benefit of having some kind of like a ketogenic powder or a ketogenic capsule or liquid that you have on hand. And of course, it's also very good for sports performance as well.
Yeah, without a doubt, man. I've dabbled into that world a little bit, kind of opportunistically. but it's not currently part of my regular routine, the exogenous stuff, but I'm definitely kind of interested. Yeah,
you should read that recent post. I'll link to it in the show notes, because I've actually started to use I've started to use ketones like in the afternoon when I normally go into a workout fasted. Not because I'm hungry necessarily, but because it gives me that slight extra boost, but then also this longevity effect. Because I'm really getting into, you know, my goal right now with this whole like telomere testing thing I'm doing is to have a biological age of 25 by the time that I'm chronologically 40. And so that's one of the things that I'm beginning to implement a little bit more, is like clean ways to get into ketosis and the use of these things like beta hydroxybutyrate salts. So anyways, though, Joe, I wanted to ask you about a few other things here with regard to just you and what you're up to, because the last time that we talked, we had come back from doing this digital detox / hot yoga / adventure retreat in Costa Rica. One of the best times of my life last year, where me and you and I don't know, how many people did we have there?
Gosh, we had about 60 people in Costa Rica.
Yeah. Whole bunch of people. We went spearfishing, and we had like this resort up in the hills with this amazing food every day. And we were making like superfood smoothies that may or may not have occasionally had tequila added to them. And, you know, doing like fire dancing around the fire at night with like drum circles. And it was just like, it was amazing. It was like surreal. And you call this thing, do you say runga or runga or runga? How do you say it?
Runga.
Runga. What's runga mean?
So, you know what's so funny is the name runga actually started from the yoga pose Chaturanga. Jules, who taught yoga with us last year, and she continued.
Oh, yeah. Jules was the instructor there. She's amazing. Yeah,
she's amazing. And she used to, because of my Spartan ties, she used to call me Mr. Spartan Face, because I could get into whatever poses that she wanted me to, but I would do it with a grimace, not with a smile. And my face would always be just contorted to kind of maintain this posture. And what was so funny is after one of the poses that would make me especially sort of uncomfortable, we would go into Chaturanga, which is sort of the reset. And she would go, Chaturanga Aru, because that's what Spartans do.
Right, of course.
So I always had this kind of, Chaturanga was always in my head. And when we were trying to name this event, which, you know, for the first 2 or 3 years, it was just me going on vacation, asking if anybody wanted to come. And so we didn't have a name. And then we named it Runga and chopped off the chutta. And it worked. People started immediately saying, oh, you know, why do I light my ears? Well, it's a Runga thing. Or, you know, why do I, you know, dance around a fire almost naked? Well, that's a Runga thing or whatever.
I wasn't also almost naked. I was wearing cargo shorts. I put on pants for once. I think I wore a Speedo all week and put on pants for the fire dance.
Yeah, that's true. There's a pretty funny picture of us checking into a hotel, and I got no shirt. You have no pants. It's like outrageous. But so anyways, that became the name. And then when I researched it, you know, there's a tree in Australia called the Axe Breaker, and it's a really hard, dense tree, and it's called the Runga tree. And so that was cool, and it just kind of stuck. And here we are, and that's definitely the name. So
okay, so this year it's not in Costa Rica though.
No, I wanted to kind of take this thing to the next level, because I think one of the things, it's not like anything else. You know, there's been this emergence of yoga retreats, both because there's more places to host them and it's getting easier and easier to do so. And so I decided that Runga, it's so different than that, that I really wanted to kind of separate it from that world. So the traditional yoga retreat these days, not to kind of put it down, but a lot of times, you know, it's 20 minutes from the airport and, you know, you do some yoga and eat some good food and, you know, you stay for a week and you go home. Whereas with Runga, you know, yoga is a big part of it, but to me, it's a little bit like it's a skyscraper. And yoga is like the elevator. And when we're talking about the skyscraper, we don't really talk about the elevator. Like, of course we have one, but there's so much more to it than that. So this year was a little bit of a test, admittedly. I found this incredible venue. You know, it's a tough job, but I had to scout a few venues throughout Central and South America. When I got to Sensara in Panama, I immediately just fell in love with it. And I had traveled for 17 hours to get there. And it was like the fact that it could blow me away. And aside from that, the people there are like nobody I've ever met before, just such amazing people. So I decided, you know, we're going to do this thing. We're going to make the anti-yoga retreat. We're going to do this thing at a tough time of year. We're going to do it the 2 weeks. We're going to host 2 weeks because 60 people last year was too many. So we're going to do 2 25 person weeks. We're going to do it the 2 weeks directly before Christmas.
Do you have to go for 2 weeks or can you choose which parts you want to show up for? Because a lot of people can't go for 2 weeks, dude.
No. So it's 1 week. So there's two groups.
Okay.
Week one, week two. So yeah, it's a 1 week trip. It's in Panama. Sansara is, it's not 20 minutes from the airport. There's quite a drive once you land in Panama City, which is beautiful. And you go past the Panama Canal and you can learn so much, but this is an off the grid adventure reset where you're surrounded by people like you and I and Eric and a lot of the other amazing people we bring, like Scott, who you called the scraper, and we're all there. All these amazing people I've met over the years, I basically just kind of keep them at arm's length and then try to talk them into coming with me to
it's pretty cool. For some reason they all show up and this thing flies under the radar. Like obviously it's only a limited number of people that can even get in. And I think from what you told me before the call, it's almost full, but I'm going. So what I'm doing is I'm going down to Kauai to teach this XPT certification with Laird Hamilton. And then I'm hopping on a plane and I'm going straight over to Panama. And I think I'm going to be there like December 12th through the 20th. I'm going to be there.
Yes.
And it's freaking amazing because you have all these adventures. Like last year we were doing obstacle course racing, and I know you've got like volcano hiking worked in, and of course there's like the whole like whitewater rafting zip lining thing, but then food. Amazing food and amazing adventures. And I believe we're also going to be doing some spearfishing this year. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, I mean, we literally raised the bar in every single way for this year. So
what do you mean?
So now we're directly on the beach. All the activities, you know, they're completely custom. Like we just figured out what we could make work with what we had down there and put together this amazing week. So it's not, you know, ziplining at a place that a million people have gone ziplining before. It's spear fishing with local fishermen in some of the most exotic, beautiful waters that you've ever seen in your life. It's horseback down the beach from when I was there a couple months ago. It was one of the most gorgeous beaches I've ever seen, and I was the only one on it for a mile. There's a lot of benefits to going to a place that nobody wants to go, or they want to go, but it's not easy to get to. It takes work. So I can go fly to Panama and find somewhere 25 minutes from the airport. That'll be really easy. They'll pick me up. Runga is about creating a non-replicatable experience and doing all the heavy lifting for you. So even down to the kettlebells. So I just shipped 3,000 pounds of Russian kettlebells to Panama. And I could have bought a few in Panama that are probably a lot worse, but it would have been a lot easier. But everything at Runga is about being taken to the next level and being something that just you won't find anywhere else. And real quick, because you mentioned the food, last year and the year before, the food has been amazing. But this year, you're actually able to submit your dietary preferences and your menu will be planned accordingly. So you'll order off a menu for each meal. And if you're keto or if you're vegan or if you're somewhere in between, you'll have a menu that's custom for you. And so your meals are just going to be outrageously on par with what you want. And on top of that, we'll make sure to get some of that really good wine we talked about down there with it in case you want to indulge.
I love it. I'm in. There is, I believe, some kind of an incentive or a discount that the folks who are listening in right now are going to get that nobody else gets, correct?
That is correct. A free.
Okay. Fill me in on what it is. Cause I want to make sure I say this the right way. Cause I think last year, when I mentioned the one in Costa Rica, I may have described what people are getting incorrectly. So I want to make sure folks know exactly how to get into this thing and then like where to type in a code or whatever so they can save money and get like the free, because everybody there had got like this, what they got like a human charger and all these amazing gifts when they signed up after hearing the podcast. So what do people do and what do they get?
Yeah, I mean, Human Charger came in strong last year. They gave everybody from your podcast a Human Charger, and that was just amazing. Such a cool opportunity. This year, it's a lot easier. So there is a code. It's Ben. If you register,
just BEN.
BEN. Okay. You can also just choose your name from the dropdown. So it says, you know, were you referred by, and then Joe or Ben or Scott. So if you choose Ben there, it's going to do the same thing. People that sign up from your podcast are going to get a movement assessment when they get down there. So one of our experts is going to actually assess their movement and give them a prescription as to what their movement needs are. And there's, of course, a lot of things you can do about that right in the week, but just so you really understand your body and where your limitations are physically. So we're going to give everybody that assessment, which is whether it's from you or Scott or Dr. Spider or anybody else. We've got some rock stars that a very few people actually get to work with one-on-one. So it'll be a one-on-one assessment for them.
Awesome. I love it. Well, the URL for the show notes for everything that Joe and I just talked about, including Roonga, you can find at bengreenfieldfitness.com/GIJoe. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/GIJoe. I will link to everything, my previous podcast with Joe and also some of these other very interesting folks who he introduced me to, who we also get to hang out with at Roonga, if you're lucky enough to be there this December. I'll put a link to my interview with Dan John and this RKC certification that Joe and I were talking about, some of those pieces of cardio equipment, the 30 days no alcohol experiment, the article on ketone salts and some of my favorite sleep apnea apps, and of course Roonga 2017. And by the way, not to project you guys too far out into the future, but I'm just going to throw a teaser out there for you. In addition to an amazing time at Roonga in 2017, we're planning on some freaking amazing New Year's parties, I think the following year, and maybe might move this thing into like a full-on New Year's celebration. So it's kind of like this little family. Like, we got our own little Facebook page, and it's like a cool event to go to. I recommend it if you like these tiny little intimate adventures in a global hotspot. Joe does a fantastic job with it. I'm going to be there, like I mentioned, for a full, I'll be there like 7 to 9 days ish. So come on down, hang out, have a good time, party, eat amazing food, and just kind of check out for a little while this December. So we'll put a link to that as well. Joe, thanks for coming on the show, dude.
Thanks for having me, Ben. It's always a pleasure. It's always a ton of fun.
All right, folks. Well, I'm Ben Greenfield, along with Joe DiStefano, signing out from bengreenfieldfitness.com/GIJoe. Have a healthy week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.